The Laments of a Lumberjack by Dudi Seescree. Words to Elate. Second Agenda. Copyright 2016, Dudi. No part of this book should be redistributed without prior permission from the author, both in print, portable digital format and online. Disclaimer. All readers are welcome to challenge the contents of this book, and should examine it with their uttermost intellectual capabilities, before they can accept them for reference purposes, because they are largely a work of the author's own personal opinions. Some stories given as examples in this book do not represent factual or historical events, but have been used fictitiously to bring out the literal aspects of discussions, and also demonstrate authors' intended thoughts and ideas exemplarily. Do not take them too seriously. This book is stacked up with numerous mini-chapters the author refers to as laments. Each lament stands for each idea or topic of discussion. You will also find some non-English words, the author has used them only for the sake of enhancing description. They are not a result of typo. Contents. Contention. Lament 1, Too Late to Recall. Lament 2, Birdie Left. Lament 3, Forever Never. Lament 4, Selena Goes to the Wild. Lament 5, The Woman from Cottle Town. Lament 6, The Roman General and the Greek Princess. Lament 7, Captain Cook and Bar. Lament 8, Let Me Be Your Hero. Lament 9, Your Fault. Lament 10, Miss Commando. Lament 11, Love for Hire. Lament 12, Fair Play. Lament 13, A Monument for the She-Wolf. Lament 14, No More Men. Lament 15, The Great Swap. Lament 16, Merino School for Bad Girls. Lament 17, Children and Woes. Lament 18, Femi Pressure. Lament 19, Search for True Love is Still On. Lament 20, Nidus in Shining Armor. Lament 21, The Warrior Women of Hotelum. Lament 22, Non-Warrior Groom. Lament 23, Looks That Almost Killed. Lament 24, Conflict Over Chores. Lament 25, Dangerous Roles. Lament 26, Bachelor's Greatest Fears. Lament 27, Easy Prey. Lament 28, Marry My Sister. Lament 29, Love for Thy, Riffle. Lament 30, Girl on the Balcony. Lament 31, Toddlers in a Love Triangle. Lament 32, Daughters of Shay Zone. Lament 33, Diamonds Over the Bridge. Lament 34, Where Is My Mama? Final Clause. Footnotes. Contention. The Laments of Mr. Duncan Plunk, a professional woodchopper who laments outside his log cabin, following a series of incidents that led him to lose his only family under a mysterious circumstance. This is what I will do, he says unto himself, I will pick up my chainsaw and go back to the woods, there I will forget all my pain, my suffering, and everything that has ever brought me sorrow, I will not remember any more. Lament 1, Too Late to Recall. I lost the warmth of my life because of that horrible witch. If I were the butcher of Zogita, I could have sent my guards to warn her to stop spreading her venom. If she doesn't hear me, then I will cut her tongue out. With my chainsaw I shall slash it off, so that she does not bring misery to more families. If people would understand the misery I am in right now, then they'll know I have a good reason for my rude laments, so nobody should try to accuse me of speaking evil. Everyone knows her, she's the woman that wears a leather jacket, and puts on a silver crown, and her full name is Harriet Hornbill, the Defiler, because she has poisoned the minds of many young women with her dangerous doctrine, including my sweet little birdie who left me in the middle of winter. She was walking on her way back home one evening when the witch beckoned her. She lured her into her house where she did all the damage she could on her. She whispered doubt and corruption into her ears. Why are you wasting your time with that poor hairy lumberjack in the woods, when you can have a better life here with me in the city palaces? Come, she said to her, I will teach you how to get many riches, stop living like a church mouse, I will also show you how to strike fear into the hearts of kings, to make them do what you command them to, and even sit on their thrones," she added. "Come, my child," she lured her deeper and deeper into her enclave, then prepared a concoction of some boiled bat skins and fish gills, then told her to look inside. "Get closer, my child, look inside, and open your eyes. This is how your future will be, only if you follow every single instruction I give you from there." Most women who visit her home never come back to their loved ones. Long ago, she used to live in a small town far away. When she left that residence, the whole place turned into a ghost town. Some say she had invited the whole community to a great feast, while she secretly prepared a potion. When the partygoers had eaten and drank their fill, she secretly added drops of some unknown ingredients into their foods and drinks. Everyone who went to that banquet never returned, except for the beggar who did not eat anything. He carried all the food he could find to his makeshift tent to eat at a later time. When he returned for more that night, he found everyone laying down dead, and the banquet owner was nowhere to be seen. He dropped his possessions in shock and ran off to call for help. When they arrived late the following morning, they found the house empty, overgrown with tall grass and walls scaled with molds. It looked like it has been 5 centuries since anyone entered that house. When he went to look where the bodies lay, he only found stones in their place, overgrown with weeds. Such an experience was beyond his comprehension. "I have not been away for 24 hours, yet so much of this has happened," he exclaimed. "Are you sure there was a party here last night?" the police jeered him. "Can't you see the poor man is out of his mind?" They giggled to one another, they shook their heads as they walked away, they left him standing there and went back to their post. In later days and weeks, reports kept coming in about missing family members, but no one could explain where they have gone to. There are some who remember the homestead was once an active place, but could not prove it. That same woman is still the one roaming our neighborhoods to this day. How can she claim to have divine insight about family affairs, while she herself destroyed her entire family in a single night? Now I sit here all alone. Friends come to visit, they try to encourage me to stop grieving. "A man is supposed to be strong. Don't humiliate yourself by crying in the public," they say to me. If she had made up her mind, then there is nothing you could have done about it. Just let go. I accept their counsel for a moment, but as soon as they are gone, I go into my cabin, cover my head with pillows and continue to wail loudly, "Where is my birdie? Where are you, my sweet fragrance? How could you leave me without notice? I thought I was the happiest man in the world. Only now do I realize I was living in a dream. I can't take it anymore. It's just that they don't understand," sobs. Sobs. "I would rather quench my burning heart with tears than to suffer in silence. Isn't talking about a problem better than keeping silent? Since she is a powerful relic, it becomes much harder to defeat her. She had everything she needed, except the heart to keep her content. She thought she was trying to help, but ended up tearing families into pieces. She is not aware that her tongue is causing more harm than good. She ridiculed women that were better off than herself. This ill-minded woman lures young girls out of their homes by use of charm. She sings irresistible songs with a harp, calls them out, 'Come quickly with me.' She turned many wild, they all ran into the woods. She deceives them saying, 'I will give you power that is beyond your imagination, only if you do what I tell you.' She uses their weaknesses against them. Some of the few that returned were untamable, scared of people and isolated themselves from the community. There in the woods she performed rituals and taught them to do the same when they returned to their homes, but only in absolute privacy when no one could see them. She managed to sow seeds of rebellion in their hearts. Friends and relatives, many people who knew them before came to see them and were shocked at first sight. Elderly people came, stopped by to check. In their disbelief they ask, 'What has happened to these children? A witch on the hunt took away the pride and joy of my heart. Now I am like an empty vessel. That witch, she managed to turn my sweetheart against me, and left my house in a pile of ruins. We will send a fearsome knight there to tear down her shrine, so that no one else would ever go there. Lament too, birdie left. My sweet precious birdie left me because she felt neglected. I did not take good care of her, that's what she said. My dear, where are you going to hide? I know every city, every village, and every town. Where are you going to hide? I know every nation, every language, and every tribe. Please come back home, your warm, quiet cabin awaits you. She left me saying that I was a beast, that I was too fierce, too ugly, too threatening to make an intimate companion, but when she left for good, she went from place to place and was kissed by frogs. Wasn't I better than the countless frogs that smothered my princess and queen with their disgusting kisses? I at least was better because I was strong enough to protect her from all kinds of danger. It is not fair for man to be alone, he needs a companion, so that they can stay warm in the winter. Lament 3, Forever Never. I thought we would finally live forever after, was I lying to myself? Could I have been living in a dream? I thought I was alone in my chase after you, little did I know that there were other men who admired you the way I did. Were it not for that vulgar hornbill, then my birdie would be in my arms today, I would caress her the whole afternoon, in the cool shade of the oak tree in the parks. Lament 4, Selina Goes to the Wild. Selina grew up on a steep rocky Alps homestead, her parents took good care of her, and made sure she had the best possible start in life. Ever since she was a child, they often said to her, "Go girl, pursue your dreams, and do not let anyone or anything put you down." She grows up with these thoughts in mind, believing everything in life is possible. Her parents' encouragements and motivations kept her going, and soon she graduates from school and leaves the house for a job in the big city. It is when she gets out that the cruel reality of life outside her home hits her hard. It knocks her like a boxer's punch. On her way to the city, she goes through a thick coniferous vegetation, she meets wolves, jackals, and grizzly bears. "Hello, princess," says the jackal, "it looks like you have lost your way. I think I know what you are looking for, I will help you find it. Trust me, everything will be all right." "You know what, cutie princess, come to my palatial residence, there is a lot of honey the badger left me, and it's large enough for both of us to eat for weeks." They say all kinds of nice things to her, hoping she would get close enough to them. Then when she is in a very close range, right at the perfect spot, and has lowered her guard, they would all at once pounce on her, rip her limbs apart, tear her flesh and feed on her, leaving nothing behind but bones. They would then walk away chatting happily after having a ravenous feast. "It's long since we have ever tasted a princess toast, probably many years," they would gloat. But Selina isn't that fool who would easily accept a gift from a stranger. Selina, on seeing this, then sits down and weeps sadly. "Why had my parents never told me this earlier? Didn't they reveal to me that they had loved me? What now? People give their daughters all the education they would need, but as they go outside, there it's a totally different world. Many strange and mysterious things happen, they meet layers upon layers of barbed fence giving back a clear signal. Crossing limits, do not go beyond this point, turn back and go wherever you came from." Unable to secure a job, she gathers her few belongings, goes to the public stadium, calls up a small crowd she could find and kicks off a campaign. She became a candidate vying for the seat of the mayor of Argos City. People were jubilant at first, from the beginning of her speech, but as soon as they realized what her intentions really were, they looked down and started to walk away one by one. Even her friends who were with her at the college did not want to look at her. None of them, not even one, would cast a vote for her. They ask her, "Girl, are you sure you know what you are looking for? You are a crazy bee. Do you have any idea what you are about to throw yourself into? It's a tough life out there, tougher than the toughest thing known to man. Only the hard and strong make it through. The world is cruel, so cruel that when infants are born, and feels the cold heart of the planet, in the first few minutes of birth, they start crying, they wail loudly saying, 'Oh mama, why did you let me come into this terrible place?' They sob endlessly." Lament 5, The Woman from Cottle Town. Listen to this tale of a woman from Cottle Town. That little mystical motor town that lays by the lakeside. Long ago in her youth, she made up her mind not to have any children. She used to say demeaning things about raising children, she spoke about how children are a great burden, how they hinder women from achieving their lifelong careers and pursuit of happiness. She went all over the cities preaching her beliefs, telling others to do the same, to do exactly as she did. Now in her retirement age, with no children of her own, she's moving around with a different agenda. She traverses the streets snatching babies from their mother's arms, claiming that with her they will have a better chance in life, she will give them a better livelihood, a better education, a better future. In her helicopter she hovers above clinics and dispensaries of underprivileged neighborhoods around the globe, looking for a child to steal. Some young women realized that their babies were disappearing mysteriously and therefore decided to take immediate action. They went ahead to confront her, then said this unto her, "You thought of yourself as wise in all things, now use your divine wisdom to manufacture a living child and hold it in your arms. People do not produce children, neither do they manufacture them with their bodies, but are rather a gift from above. Children may be a burden, but they are also a great source of joy. A newborn brings great joy to the family. You were once the tycoon's wife and came from a very privileged family. You had the best of the best chances of raising your family. You could have produced 20 kids if you wanted to, but you didn't. You had lots of property, homes, vast estates, businesses, cars, etc. Now let those be your children," they said unto her. "Look at us here, we live from hand to mouth. Many of our sisters, aunts, and mothers died bearing their first child, simply because of the poor health conditions here. Trying to survive here is like trying to stand on a nail's head. Our doctors have blurry vision from over drinking, and our nurses have very rough hands as a result of working part-time in the mines. If you are going to deliver here, then surely know you are going to be handled roughly. Very few children survive their first year of birth. Our parents were born into servitude, we were born into servitude, and living it through now. When we see our children smile, at least they give us hope. They make us believe that tomorrow is going to be better than today. They make us forget this misery we live in for a while. Maybe they are the ones who are going to change our lives. Some may become teachers, engineers, governors, and help us escape this misery. Now tell us, rich woman, why are you stealing our babies? You had all the time and resources to your liking. If I were you, I would have built myself a stately home and raised the happiest family in the entire country. Everyone would hear about my family and wished they lived at my home. Now you want to take away the little hope we have left. You had your time for fun, what now?" The woman, upon listening to such a humiliating lecture, she could not take in any more. She began to curse everyone. She cursed the young women, she cursed the young men, she cursed the doctors and nurses, she cursed her parents, everyone. She went wild like a mad wolf, her hair hung shaggily from her head, her eyes bloodshot red, her face filled with fury. She immediately went for her helicopter and jumped into it, flew away south into the desert where she had her home dug into a cave. She completely shut herself off, never to see anyone from the outside world again. Never. Lament 6, The Roman General and the Greek Princess. Once a renowned Roman general came across Greek lady in the plains of Peloponnesus. "Who is that woman standing over there?" he asked his guards. "I think she is from Macedon. She is a Greek lady," one of the bodyguards said. "And what is she doing here alone, all by herself?" inquired the general further. "Let's go and find out anyway," added the general. They approached the woman, kindly greeted her, then proceeded with their interrogation. "What in the world could bring such an energetic young woman out to these treacherous plains? Are you lost?" "No," she replied. "Early this morning I sent out my servants to get me some medicinal herbs. I urgently needed them to treat my aging father. It's now late in the evening, I haven't heard from them since. I hope they have not been kidnapped by bandits or mercenaries. I really care for them," she later went on to describe how they looked like and what they were wearing that morning. The general then split his guards into two groups. One was sent out to search for the two servants, while the other accompanied the general while they were being led back into Pylos. As they walked along the path, the general noticed something he had never seen back in his small home village. The lady wore a long beautiful silk garment adorned partly with golden stripes. It also had a high slit that constantly revealed her thighs as she walked. Then one of the guards noticed that the general could not get his eyes off the woman's legs. He went over close to him, murmured to his ears, "I told you, master, Greek women are very attractive." The general shrugged him off as if he never heard anything. They went on with their journey and entered the city gates, and were received by the steward as the king was away on his regular expeditions. They were given a comfy rest. Later that night, the other guards came in with good news that the missing servants had been found. They had lost their way back into the city gates, a great tragedy they almost found themselves in. The following morning, the general walked through the city with the eye of an adventurer. He greeted back everyone that passed him greetings, and answered every curious question thrown at him. He also noticed that every other woman in the city wore a high-slit garment like the first one they met. He wondered greatly about the nature of this strange imperial city, as he waved every citizen goodbye, heading his way back home. Several months later, he returned to the same city to find a bride. Everyone thought he was going to pick the pretty young woman who had brought him into the city. However, in contradiction and a great surprise to the city dwellers, he went ahead and picked the daughter of a slave. She was the only one in the entire city who did not have neither shining linen garments nor a high slit through her dress. When the people tried to stop him, saying she was nothing more than a worthless slave, and forbidding him from touching the barbarian filth, he replied this to them, "I have been a citizen of Rome since the day I was a child. My other combatants and I have served in the army for more than 2 decades, yet the Republic treats us as slaves, simply because of where we were born. If you will not let me marry her because she is a slave, please know that I too am a slave in a general's cloak." He finished these words and went on with his marriage proceedings. "You now rule the Ionian and Aegean seas. A time will come when the Republic will rob you of all your slaves," he said to them. When the general went back home, he had thought unto himself, "This woman has a beauty and attraction undeniable before the eyes of any man." Then he thought again, "I am not likely the only one who has noticed this. Where she came from, aren't there men also? They probably have showered her with tons of praises. She is already aware of her physical beauty and may demand every man around her to treat her like a queen. She might demand that I should give her special care and attention because of that. What if she is stepping on the backs of other women whom she thinks don't match her elegance, treating them like sack clothes?" The general had thought long and hard about this, before making his mind that he should go for the slave's daughter, even though he knew there would be repercussions. Lament 7, Captain Cook and Bar. "A young lady and a gentleman used to walk into this restaurant a while ago," says the waiter. "One afternoon they sat at the balcony and were having a conversation. I heard them speak with my own ears while I was cleaning the floor. Then the lady turned to the gentleman and said, 'Now I have seen all you have shown me, a mega mansion, a fleet of cars and a private helicopter. What else will you wish to show me?' Then the gentleman said, 'Now that you are with me, you can have anything you want.' But the lady seemed unresponsive. 'You have lots of money, I know that. What else do you have to offer me apart from your wealth?'" The gentleman had no immediate answer. He thought long and hard, then with a face gleaming with brilliance as if found a lost object, says to the lady, "Since the day I saw you, my heart melted away. I could not take my eyes off you. I couldn't help it but follow you wherever you went. Now tell me, my dear, what else can you do for your admirer apart from the queen's look on your face?" "But can't you see that I am pretty?" interjected the lady. "I am prettier than all the other women you have ever come across. You told me that many times. How come you seem to ignore me this time? What about a look inside that little head of yours? Behind that pretty face could be a load of trash, you know," insisted the gentleman. Soon they were drawn into what seemed as a slight argument. The lady rose from her seat and left. The guy ran after the girl, who was then met with extremely harsh remarks. She quickly disappeared behind the corridors, never to be seen again. "In all my 15 years of working here in this restaurant, I have never listened to such a conversation, so sweet yet with great emotional intelligence," says the waiter. Lament 8, Let Me Be Your Hero. The wooden-legged man finally speaks his heart out. "Oh, daughter of the plumber, how I wish you knew how much I had loved you. Do not think that now I am one-legged, I have become useless. In fact, I am strong as ever. Don't people remember that it is I who killed Naga, that fearsome crocodile who terrorized the town? He bit my wooden legs, then I told it, "Hey, you fool, you have taken one of my legs before, now you can have that one too, you can chew this piece of wood." Then I turned and slashed off its head with my dagger. From that day onwards the rivers have become safer to cross ever since. I am a short wooden-legged man, yet I am also the only one who can climb the palm trees to bring down coconuts and dates for the community to feast on. A gentleman does not care much about what his lady asks, whether it is true or false, as long as she can make him feel like a hero, she can get whatever she asks for. Smart is the lady who makes his gentleman think he is strong. All the gentleman want is someone who makes him feel strong and responsible for the safety of his family, even though he may be weak as a twig, he wants to feel strong as steel. If he finds himself in a place where his efforts are loathed, then it is better for him to spend all his days of living in the woods, and gnaw timber with beavers and raccoons than to stay in a home where he is looked down upon. Since nothing from him is ever appreciated at home, the raccoons at least appreciate the chunks of woods he leaves them, which they use to build their homes. The grizzly loves Uncle Timon a lot. When they see him coming the cubs are excited, because they know that after Uncle Timon is done fishing he leaves lots of salmon behind for them to munch. Uncle Timon is a fellow they'd never hurt. When he is away, they protect his fishing grounds from other bears and fishermen. When the gentleman hears that his treasured companion has been hurt, he comes back rushing from whatever place he was heading to. "Yes, me lady, is there a problem? I am here for you," he says. "Let me be your hero. My swan flower. Oh girl, let me be your hero. I am the golden eagle. I will lift you up and carry you to the mountain top. Up above the highest rocks and shelter you in the safety of the stone walls. Where no enemy will ever reach you. When the sun is high up in the sky, I will raise my wings above your head. To cover you with cool shade. So that no heat from the sun will ever hurt you. Up at my home there is no place for crows, nor vultures, nor filthy birds of prey. Oh girl, let me be your hero. I am the black stallion. Fastest of all horses. Who runs faster than the north winds. I will lift you onto my back and carry you to the countryside. I will gallop up the hill and down the valley gracefully. My hooves will pound the ground hard. I will show you the smooth hilltop that is covered with beautiful roses. There you will relax from the long weary afternoon. No sound of noise nor discomfort. Endless hours of peaceful stay. Oh girl, let me be you hero. I am the Lion King. The most fearsome of all beasts. When I am around, no one dares touch my precious. My roar is enough to scare the wits out of even the biggest and strongest. I will protect you from all danger. Oh girl, if you let me be your hero. I am the shield of Hercules. Harder than rock and stronger than steel. No enemy arrow can penetrate nor spear nor sword. When I am on your side nothing will ever hurt you. Oh girl, if you let me be your hero. I am the harp of Homer. I will play you beautiful music. And sing you sweet songs. The folk tales of the old ages. The legends of our forefathers. They will calm your anger and soothe your pain. Oh girl, if you let me be your hero. I am the champion of champions. Never known a defeat all my life. Oh girl, if you let me be your hero. Man does not care much whether the wife is telling the truth when making demands saying, "I want this, I want that, do for me this, do for me that," as long as she makes him feel like a hero, he will be proud and eager to do everything she asks. Even if he is actually weak and lazy, he likes to think of himself as strong and reliable. He doesn't care whether he is being manipulated a dozen times a day, as long as she can make him feel like a hero he could never mind. Nearly everything a man does, whether in the fields, in politics, in work, is to try to win the woman's acceptance, attention, or approval. If he is not trying to please his deity, then he is trying to please some kind of lady. All his energies are driven in that single direction. His actions may seem superheroic. But when you examine him closely you will notice that he was trying to please some kind of lady. The princess and her hero. History has always been teaching us that the pretty princess is kidnapped by a fierce dragon who keeps her locked away in a distant unreachable prison in a very high tower, a home it fiercely guards, She stays there for a long time crying out for help, but after a while comes along this young warrior that slays the dragon and saves his princess. If we were to twist the story a little, it would go like this. The dragon abducted a princess, then took her to its tower where she locked her in, but what it didn't know was that the princess was a great warrior. Using her might, she broke the doors of the prison open, took out a sharp sword and pierced the beast through the heart. When the young man arrived, he found the dragon laying on the floor and the princess holding a shining sword in her hand. She had delivered herself from the beast's bondage, and she does not need a savior. The young man's enthusiasm then turns cold. He felt sad now that he is no longer needed. His time and energy was all wasted while traveling to reach her. He then turns and set for home. He makes plans to visit another kingdom. Maybe there is another princess in trouble somewhere who might need his efforts. Lament 9, Your Fault. I once came across an angry guy who was saying this to his wife: "You gave birth to thieves and robbers, you bore me criminals, gangsters and harlots. How I regret raising such a family." What led to these awful statements was because his son was being held in a juvenile detention center, and when he was asked to go get him, he refused but instead called the mother and told her, "Your son has become a bandit. Go get him at the detention headquarters. I would not continue to bear the humiliation I have faced and the way it has ruined my good name. Those filthy maggots your womb produces, I can't stand them." But when I looked into the relationship much deeper, I came to realize that this was the fellow who had failed to secure a job for many years, when he was forced to immigrate to a neighboring country to seek fortune. Many more years passed as he lived there, sending from very little to nearly nothing back home. Now he's arrived and has not even spent a week. He starts receiving bad news of his children's whereabouts. When children of a given family become a public menace, it's their mother that will get the most blame for not having raised them well. Their father will get a few words of rebuke though, but quickly left out of public scrutiny. Lament 10, Miss Commando. We met a woman at the airport who spoke with a deep voice. All the guards feared her because of this, and whenever she asks them to do anything for her, they'll speedily undertake the task. Her voice growled like a truck engine and rumbled loud as thunder. "Are you sure this is a woman?" Danny asked the fellow carrying his luggage. "She speaks a man's voice, and also with great authority she commands her juniors." Lament 11, Love for Hire. Men can now buy love for a few days' worth of work. While riding home one evening, we came across a signpost which read, "Love for Hire, for only a few pennies, get lots of hugs plus 2 hours of EXTA free chat." This notion led the cowboys believe that a woman's love is tied to money. If it's not that, then at least something else. Either it's attention, care, understanding, whatever it may be. She can never give her love for free, not unless she gets something in return. Why would you love someone for nothing anyway? Would you love that stone over there just because it exists? It lays calmly in its place. You like it when you find out it can be cut and used to fill the gaps in your ruinous fence wall, a love of give and take. Lament 12, Fair Play. An elderly man once said to me, "Wedlock is such an unfair game. You will find either a man taking advantage of the woman or the woman is taking advantage of the man's weaknesses. It's one way or the other. If you are not the oppressed, then you must be the oppressor. There can never be fair play. There will always be one who takes advantage of the other." I have seen men who take advantage of women and have also seen women who take advantage of weak men. Lament 13, A Monument for the She-Wolf. I wonder why the women of this town never acknowledge the successes and achievements of other women, especially those that fight for their rights. How many do the acknowledgement out of mutual love, appreciation, admiration, and gratitude? Even those who worked very hard to support them, they won't even say thank you back to them. They are among the first people to backbite them and become envious of their new comforting lives. When this happens, then the old fellows who had been beaten by the lady in the campaign now come back to jeer her. "We shall build a monument for the she-wolf," they say unto her. "You wanted them to be empowered, now they are empowered. You worked hard for many years, campaigned extensively, and your efforts have borne fruits. Will those women you have delivered from the bondage of cruel man build a monument to honor your name and sing their hearts out, praising the achievements of your life?" Because you have sacrificed so much for them, was the sacrifice well worth it? Had you invested all this energy in your family, you would be a happy retiree by now. Isn't blood still thicker than water? You have spent so much of your time and resources on them, how come none has come to your aid, now that you are alone and weak? Was all your work in vain? Some men in the town gather in a group and say unto one another, this could be the villain that whispered evil things to our beauty queens, and made them walk out on us, so that they can join her in the woods, where they can howl and growl together in the light of the full moon, and bring terror to the sheep and shepherds of the province. You have succeeded in turning our women against us, now let's see you celebrate your victory. They say unto her, I wish I had not let her attend that hateful rally. After she came out of there, she was never the same from that day on. She could not recognize me, neither her children. When I called her, she did not discern my voice. She looks at me as if she was seeing me for the first time. She hurriedly gathered her luggage and ran off. If she were teaching them good things like being strong, brave, industrious woman, then I would have been happy by now. But since she taught them many evil things like hate, anger, revenge, superstition, they have turned extremists and separated themselves from the society. Lament 14, No More Men. I met two young ladies who were saying that they would never accept any help from a man. Based on their past negative experiences with the men they have come across, they concluded that all men are wicked who are only there to hurt them. They wanted nothing to do with any male in their lives. Once a priest came across a woman laying down on the ground when he was walking to the monastery. She was wailing, rolling herself in the dirt and pulling her hair. Others tried to stop her, but their attempts were futile. She picked sand and twigs which she threw at those surrounding her. It appeared to us that she has a lot of problems in her family and is trying to release that steam by rolling herself in the dirt, said one of the bystanders to the priest. The priest went ahead to ask the disoriented woman, whom do you belong to? He asked, get away from me, screamed the woman, I do not need your silly talk, I am not an object, why do you perceive women as property? She nagged, I didn't mean to disappoint you, madam, said the priest, I wanted to know something first before I could start to speak to you, I don't want any man in my life, all men are worthless, she said, if you are trying to intimidate me please know at once that I am not one of those women you push around, you certainly are not planning to use me as a sofa for yourself and your boys to sit on. You may be disappointed with the intimidating presence of man in your life, that is not what I meant, said the priest, when I asked to whom do you belong to? But at least you are somebody's child, do you belong to God or the dev? I don't know which one of those you are going to take because both are males, said the priest. The earthly man is imperfect, wicked, immoral, and his heart is as hard as a rock. But your true father above is not like that, put no trust of yours in earthly man. You can hate everything you see around you and that one fellow whom you live with you can despise him as much as you like, but do not let anyone make you hate your father above because when he turns his attention away from you there is no one else you can turn to nor look up to for support. Please do not harbor the grudge inside for it may bring ruin upon your own soul. Please come in and let's have a cup of tea, I see you need someone to talk to. All right then, you win, said the woman, keep saying your whatever words of penance, I will come to your service next Sunday. With this she picked herself from the ground, wiped dust off her body and clothes and began to walk away. Lament 15, The Great Swap. A time is coming when there will be an absolute swap in gender roles, it is very near, it might already be here. The women will go to work and leave the men at home to take care of the house and the kids. Their women will go to work in factories, farms, IT centers, and fight wars then fly back in fighter jets. The men will then gather themselves in homes, they sit with their legs crossed, they chat, gossip and laugh at one another and do all the household chores. They will anxiously watch the news to get updates about how their partner is doing in the fields. When she returns, lands safely at the airstrips, her partner is waiting at the terminal. Upon seeing her, he screams and runs towards her, he gives her a big hug and lots of kisses, he keeps holding her tightly to his chest for nearly an hour, they cry together in each other's arms. When the woman has had a long day of hard work and drives in late into the night, she calls out for the man, who then rushes into the living room. "Yes, milady, you called for me, what ya say?" He speaks humbly, keeping his head down low. The lady wears a three-piece suit with three stars on each of her shoulders. Bundles of shining metals are hanging from her left breast as well. She stands upright with her head raised into the air and interrogates the man, looking straight into his eyes. "I hope you have prepared my bed properly, because I am very tired now. I need lots of rest today." The man, now dressed in skirt, goes on to finish the laundry. The lady, seeing this, her face gleams with a smile, for the man is now completely submissive and undertakes every command she gives speedily. There was a time when women were greatly confined and denied access to basic life skills such as education, and everyone worked very hard to fight this social issue. We joined hands to make sure that all our children get equal opportunities in life, whether male or female. Those dark olden days are now gone, if not at least fading away. Now we have nearly achieved our society's goal. Women are nearly in all the known professions. They are lecturers, doctors, engineers, administrators, etc. After the achievement of this objective, a new problem has created itself. Now the women know everything. They can read and write, they can literally do anything. There is nothing the men can hide from the women. No more secret information that made them great and powerful. All of it is out there exposed. So what now? What's next? What do you do after you have achieved all your objectives? Some men are beginning to see powerful women as a threat to their personal ambitions, which should not be the case. The woman tries to scan her partner's documents and secret files to make sure that he is not up to something suspicious. She believes she is trying to protect him, watch over him so as not to fall into something bad. The man, on the other hand, sees the woman as embarrassingly intrusive, poking her nose into everything he does, becoming a threat to his privacy and personal freedoms. "How long will this surveillance go on?" he exclaims. Man thinks that now woman has become a threat to his personal ambitions. He tries to do everything possible to make sure she does not become too powerful. If that happens, it will be impossible to reverse the overthrow. He shall be toppled over and never recover his position as an administrator. Men gather together in secret chambers unknown to the public and say this to one another: "Women have come far enough. Now they threatened our positions in public affairs. If we don't do something now, they will topple us over. It will be too late to recover." So they devise a plan to fix this emerging threat. So the captain comes up with a brilliant plan, but he asked his junior officers to keep it a top secret. "No one should get a clue to what we are after. Not even a single word should leak out." It was General George Stoneyheart himself who gave such orders. He said, "After independence, first we should build a huge statue of Lady Liberty. Then our nation and the world will know that we are fighting for the rights and freedoms of women. No one will ever suspect us anymore. They will love and support our projects. Then secondly, all children should go to school, both boys and girls, but when teaching them, train more boys in the fields of sciences and technology. Let the boys be hard-pressed, taught to be much better in physics, mathematics, biological and chemical sciences. Girls, on the other hand, should be taught to love languages and social sciences, a cheaper and easier version of the subjects, so the boys get hardened while the girls get weakened. In the armed force, when training field squadrons, give men 10 times the workload compared to that of women. Then the men will be stronger, more enduring, and form higher ranks in the security personnel. If you give a woman 50 kilograms of log to carry, then give men 100, 150 or 200 kilograms respectively. In the engineering fields, teach ladies basic engineering principles, but for men you should flood them with detailed information needed to be passed on. In the IT sector, girls are to learn basic programming skills, a simple knowledge they can use to operate a server computer or PC. But to boys, you flood them with all the source codes there are available in the market. Encourage them to even introduce their own programming languages, to use them as often as they wish. They can hack into servers of less tech savvy countries, states, or organizations, as long as they do not get caught, just to test their skills but not to cause any harm. They are to use their prerequisite knowledge to create new inventions, the next big thing that will have a global impact. They become game changers, the people who achieve such marvelous genius always go through gruesome training in college before they rise to the top. One more thing, those books that teach rocket science, drilling, and other forms of civil engineering plus all these fancy careers, fill them with strings of meaningless mathematical formulas from cover to cover, so that women would dislike them. When a lady picks up one of these science books from the library only to meet a bunch of meaningless equations cluttered all over the pages of the book, she soon distastes it and proceeds to put it back onto the shelves. I am sure she will not go beyond five or so pages. If some make it through, then it should be a few, only a handful will make it through who are therefore not really a threat. Man has complicated the study of science subjects in schools, he has woven up, screwed up, wobble around and made it nearly impossible for female students to learn them, many fall out in their first year of college. This system is designed to weaken the female students and keep the male students far ahead of the game. It has been going on like this for the past several centuries. Men deliberately complicate contents of a book to lock out most women and keep them from ever understanding anything at all. If you still want proof, then pick samples of those techno books, then read the names of the authors. You will find that 99.9% of them are written by men. Look inside, you will see nothing useful. I myself have been doing the same thing for over a decade now, it is nearly impossible to do otherwise. HIJK, look in the footnotes. With this question in the spotlight, women still have many barriers ahead of them to overcome. It was General George Stoneheart himself who came up with this code of conduct, and said it should be a top secret in the boardrooms of many organizations, companies, financial institutions, schools, and academic institutions, the civil and welfare societies. This is how things should be run literally everywhere. HIJK, look in the footnotes. Lament 16, Merino School for Bad Girls. The general then said, "Our troublesome girls, we shall take them to Merino Schools, a girls' boarding academy, where they will flock and cuddle together like sheep, and when they get out they will be dumber than when they had entered, fill their classes with sweets, dolls, and all kinds of exciting things so they will not learn much. In those schools, give them porridge and sausages, something to distract their attention. They need to teach them only basics in all things. Make all important subjects so hard and boring that as soon as they begin to dig deeper into learning they are easily discouraged and many of them quit, but the boys, let's take them to the Trojan elite amphitheaters, show them the burial sites of all the great champions and heroes of the old. Let them get some inspiration from there. If we don't do something now, our societies and families will be in utter chaos. Remember to proceed with great caution and with moderation. Keep our agenda a top secret and all will be well. If we don't do something now, they might overpower us, or challenge our dominion. Haven't you seen how women's movements have become so strong, such that even the most esteemed of our judges trembles when holding a gavel," says the general. "Bring your daughters to schools, colleges, institutes of higher learning, but be careful not to teach them everything. Limit their entry into hardcore careers, the real driving force of the society, the center of absolute dominance. For that group we shall build them a Merino school. And now you'd see them not as a rival, but an intimate companion. You hold them tightly onto your breasts saying, 'Get closer to me, my lady, my sweet precious lovely one.' The bad girls have become a great challenge to the boys and have become more of a competitor than a companion. We shall therefore take them to Merino schools." It has been several long centuries now since General Stoneheart left those instructions behind, and they are still effectively being undertaken today. Professionals still make technical careers so hard and so boring in order to discourage iron ladies from venturing into those fields. If there are those that do make it through, then it's only a handful. IJK. Anyone who knows General Stoneheart knows this testimony to be true. Lament 17, Children and Woes. What a terrible thing for children that are born into this modern-day world, for their parents are wasting their lives away with their busy careers. They will definitely abandon them in the long run. None has even time for them anymore, not even an hour a day. They are therefore left in the care and upbringing of their neighbors and schoolmates. They gather themselves into a house then say, "Our parents never come back home till late into the night, we don't have guardians around here also. So why don't we prepare a party and make some merry, tomorrow we will deceive our teachers that we missed school because of some important family get-together ceremony, prepare some foodstuffs, we will eat and enjoy ourselves, we shall drink red wine, and smoke some pipe, we shall also bring in some girls to entertain us, today is our day, let there be no other day like it. DJ, please turn on some music, let's dance to the bites like we own the house. When reports came to the house owners from their watchful neighbors that their children never went to school during the weekdays, reports that they spend their entire daytime partying, they get no positive replies. To their astonishment, the parents of those kids said they were too busy to check that out also. Our modern-day society's economic structures have made bearing of children a sign of great hardship to come for every newlywed. Children have become more of a liability than a blessed asset. Especially when the cost of living in many parts of the world so high these days, raising children feels like paying taxes. What misfortune finds a child raised without any of the parents? A boy who is raised without the presence of a mother sees women as scavengers and parasites who will strip you to the bones of lots of your valuable possessions and leave you for the dead. A girl, on the other hand, who is raised without a father sees men as cruel tyrants who torment their families, with endless strictness, excessive controlling behavior. The boy goes out, depending on what he has learned from his neighborhood girls, grows up with a screwed perception of all women. He preaches to his friends saying, "Beware of women of this town, they will infect you with their dogma and slowly destroy you, stay away from them." The girl then gossips to her friends saying, "Beware of men's bullying behavior, do not let them turn you into their slaves, they acquire negative perceptions of both men and women." What great joy is of a child who has had both parents. You hear juniors saying such disgusting things concerning one of their parents as if they were not born through them. How lucky are children who have felt the warmth of their parental love, and more blessed are children whose grandparents lived long enough to see them take their first baby steps. Lament 18, Femi Pressure. Due to peer pressure from the workplace, motherly work these days is perceived as an embarrassing old-fashioned lifestyle by many high-profile women. Things like basic house cleaning and home care are greatly loathed. If you simply mention words like cooking, it's enough to stir up anger among them. Things that were previously thought to be typical of the section, not that the work is hard, but the humiliation that comes with it is so unbearable. We cannot risk being jeered at by our female workmates, they say so. There is that one who refuses to change a baby's napkin and deny her baby's breast milk, then she starts to complain a lot, she runs to the doctor to get some help, she says to the medic, "Hey doc, I have been feeling a little discomfort on my chest a quiet lately, can you please tell me what is happening to me?" Her doctor then replies saying, "Don't you see that you have been carrying too much luggage around? Those beautiful honeypots, you need to have someone suck them dry. I can help you do that if you wish, I am just another big baby, you know." Another big boy who is always thirsty. When she was visiting the doctor, she was hoping to get some comforting words but instead got the exact opposite. Her doctor's statements shocked her more than anything she had ever heard before. She is stunned and speechless and runs out of the clinic like a deer being pursued by a bear. Back in her home, she is furious at her husband, she scolds him for not being there for her always. Then the man offers to help, he says he will be off from work for a while, therefore takes charge of the babies for a short period. When the mother goes for a special trip, since the man does not have a strong emotional connection with the babies as the mother does, he quickly gets tired, does chores half-heartedly. When he finds difficulty managing them and doing the few small tasks, he abandons them and goes to lock himself in his room. He thought he would last months. Now he hasn't stayed 2 weeks, and things are already getting tough. "Away with these noisy babies, away with these wiggling worms," he says. "If they don't shut up by midnight, then tomorrow morning, I will place them in carton boxes and put them out in the open to cool off, so that at least I am at peace for a minute. I really need some fresh air. Wouldn't it be better to spend your entire years in some noisy factory than to waste your time in this nasty house?" When the mother unexpectedly returns halfway from her vacation, she finds the house in a complete mess. She begins to scream. The moment she opens the door, she does not believe her eyes. Clothing is scattered all over the place, some hanging from the windows and cabinets, some laying on the sofas, tables, and the floors, there is a loud music playing in the background, there are taps running in the kitchen and bathroom, the walls have been nicely decorated with crayons and foodstuff by a toddler. They zigzag from left to right, another kid is dragging his brother on the floor, while there is an infant screaming loudly. "What did you do, Ricky? What did you do?" exclaimed the woman. Ricky, her husband, was now in the master bedroom, trying to fix a television set that was broken by the kids days ago, therefore didn't hear her coming. She smashed the room's door open. "How could you let this happen when you are here?" she yelled at him. "What?" he replies without looking at her. When he turns his head up, he's equally surprised. "Oh, it's you, Belinda, you are back. How come you are here early? You said you won't be back in 6 weeks, what happened?" "It's just that the project was cancelled halfway," she replied. "Okay, that's nice to hear, it sounds good news," he says calmly. "These kids of yours are giving me a really hard time," he told her. "Whose kids?" barked the lady. "Aren't they also your kids? Who conceived them, isn't it you?" "Well, that may be true to some extent, the fact that they carry your genes, they are a reflection of your stubborn nature, you never seem to believe anything I tell you." "Okay, well, you see I don't break things, while your kids are wreaking havoc all over the house, so whose character is that?" "Are you saying mine or yours?" asked the woman. "When your son did well at school, you proudly said that's my boy, and when your child does mischief, you say you are just typical of your mother. Are you blaming me for their ambitious nature, Ricky?" asked the woman. Now they begin to cast blame upon one another, their conversations dragged on for hours and slowly turned into a bitter quarrel. Ricky, upon realizing things are getting worse, he left the living room and went outside. He locked himself into his garage pretending to be repairing some engine parts. When a modern-day Western, Eastern, or Central woman tries to relax in her house just a little bit and works hard to make her home comfortable, some of her female co-workers who have no families of their own to take care of come and say this to her: "You are a disgrace to other women for conducting embarrassing household chores. You are the one letting down our strong union. Look at you, you should be ashamed of yourself. The ages of being treated as doormats have long passed. Come with us, we will show you better things to do, like getting involved in international affairs and global merchandise." When she refuses to follow them and tells them that she had already decided on what to do for the meantime, they try to ruin her image at the workplace so that she may not be able to go back to her job. When they see one of them settled down in the privacy of her house breastfeeding her newborn, they secretly take photos of her exposed chest and post those photos on the World Wide Web. They first edit them to make them appear very gross, before sending them out for everyone to see, in an attempt to embarrass her and stop her from breastfeeding. What in the world is happening to our society? Aren't these normal natural experiences? Instead of encouraging the lactating mother for having got a beautiful bouncing baby, they try to break her morale further by trying to stop her from doing what is natural to all living things on Earth. I was once seated in a bus next to a mother who was nursing an infant of about a year and a half or 2 years old. She breastfed her baby right there in the open. She cared not who was watching or what people were going to say to her or one another. Right in front of her there was another mother who had a slightly older child, but she was feeding her child with a bottle. She turned and said to the one beside me, "That big boy of yours is going to suck you dry if you continue to keep him that close to your breasts." She took the bottle her baby had and handed it over to her, saying, "Let him try this, there's still some milk inside." When she placed it on her baby's mouth, he pushed it away. When she tried it the second time, he smashed away the bottle, which then slipped from her hands and fell onto the floor. "What's wrong, little prince?" asked the other woman. "I don't suck cow's milk," said the baby and proceeded to search for her mother's breasts. The child is scared and furious. "What makes you think he will easily accept milk from a stranger?" said another passenger close to them. "Besides, he is not a calf that you should force him to suck cow's milk," she added. To those that speak rudely to women struggling to raise their young, I wish their mothers had tossed them in the garbage cans the very moment they were born, so they won't be causing others trouble as we see it now. Lament 19, Search for True Love is still on. When looking for a future spouse or partner, men and women have different ideas of what to look for. The woman looks for intellect, the man must prove his intellectual ability, for he must pass all the tests she sets for him. Sunly and moonly. Men and women are creatures that are so distinct from one another, with different backgrounds these fellows are strongly attracted to each other still, they are the perfect opposites of one another, they are like mortise and tenon joint forms. Moonly is a poor country girl looking for a handsome prince to marry her. She travels from town to town, from castle to castle, hoping some wondering eyes of some prince will land on her. Sunly is son of a poor peasant farmer who is wandering the great cities hoping to find a tournament where young men compete to hopefully win the heart of a beautiful princess. He finds none. Fortunately, they stumbled into one another in an alley at one of the marketplaces, and as each had hoped for, it was love at first sight. Sunly said to the young lady, "You shall be my princess," and the young lady said back, "You shall be my prince." Though they were both dirt poor, they were happy in each other's arms. The boy had found the princess he was looking for, while the girl too had found the prince she was searching for. Lament 20, Nidus in Shining Armor. I looked upon a castle fort standing on top of a hill and saw a medieval woman dressed in royalty. Her entire body was covered in shining armor. She stood upright with her head held up high in the air. She looked brave, fierce, and mighty. Then I turned to my companion and asked him this, "Have you seen the dazzling figure over that hill there?" "Yes, I have seen that too," said my companion. "I wonder if there is anything soft about her. Her entire body is covered with metal armor. Her heart too could be the same, hard as rock and cold as ice." Some men want nothing romantic to do with women in positions of governance and power. To him she is just another cold-hearted political rival. Even though she may be a kind and generous person, no one will give her a gentle look. With all that knowledge and skill at the back of her head, she will make a great workmate, but an intimate companion, we'd think twice. "I wonder if there is anything sweet about her at all. Is there really anything about her that is soft or tender?" According to the law of attraction, people are attracted to those that are different from them. A fisherman's son is attracted to a farmer's daughter, while a blacksmith's daughter is attracted to a potter's son. I have seen with my own eyes mighty warrior women whose hearts were no softer than the armor they were wearing. Lament 21, The Warrior Women of Hotelum. Hear the news from the warrior women of Port Hotelum. There used to be a middle age phrase that went like this. A nobleman instructs a knight, unto him he says, "Go and protect the women and the children, fight for their freedom, defend the liberty of the weak and helpless." But in this part of the world I don't think you can confidently utter those words, because many women are well armored just the way men are. Many are strong fighters in the front lines, so when calamity is about to fall the general says, "Every man for himself, flee for your life and leave unto God the rest." They'd openly brag about their stars, badges and medals achieved over the years in combat. A few centuries ago, men simply went into the army to prove their bravery and to please their women. They have been willing to throw away their lives when they were trying to prove their competence to the ladies. Today those ladies are fighting alongside them. "So what now?" they ask. "We live in the same camp, eat the same food, do the same training, then we go back home to our children." I hope none of them will go through the horrors of the trenches, or witness any of its backbone. Hope all will be able to go back to their homes safely, to their loving families. The male cadets wondered, "These female comrades, should we be gentle towards them because they are ladies, or should we be rough towards them the way we are to our male counterparts because they too are soldiers? How are the battlefields of tomorrow going to be like? Will they send in the ladies first to fight the women from the enemy's side, then the big boys take the second wave of assault, so that it will be women fighting other women and men fighting other men on the same battlefield? Just as it is in sports profession, ladies and gents are given separate avenues where they can battle one another for medals? Or should they simply fight side by side? If some of them are captured by the enemy, I wonder what their fate will be. All we can do is just hope they will be okay. We should remember that they too have got families to take care of," says the commando. "It is not right to dismiss them from their duties on lame grounds. The warrior women of Hotelum, they are formidable female fighters." Lament 22, Non-Warrior Groom. In the days of the old, brides would pick their grooms based on their bravery. There had to be a solid proof that he was strong enough to defend his family from outside attacks. The songs and praises that came in from battlefields often added them more credits, which increased their chances of getting accepted by the lady. This unfortunately will not apply to modern day women. Fighting ninjas are no longer a necessity. If you join the army to win the heart of some lady, chances are that you might never come back to wed your dream girl. Another more charming lover might enter her life before you return. If you manage to make it back safely, she might draw herself away from you further than she had been before, for she knows now you are an experienced killer. She heard the news that you strangled an alligator with your bare hands while crossing the rivers to the front lines. Her perceptions of you may change, as she could slowly and quietly walk away from you. Lament 23, looks that almost killed. A while ago, a girl nearly caused a tragic accident at the factory all because of her looks. There was a young lady that got employed at a power plant of a huge energy company. As soon as she landed on the job, she began to attract a lot of attention from her male counterparts. She was the only female around and was incredibly young, probably in her mid-twenties. Everyone seemed to be nice to her. Whatever the reasons for her admiration were not in the duty of any staff to explain or describe. For no apparent reason, she got a lot of attention from her co-workers. Whenever she walked across the plant's premise, men stopped working or talking to one another just to stare as she walked by. One even forgot to tighten the valves properly and allowed a dangerous gas to leak. It quickly spread to the entire basement rooms within minutes. It was after a while when one of the workers discovered the grave situation and warned all the others to get out of the premise as quickly as possible. Emergency procedures were quickly undertaken and the disaster averted. When the guy was being interrogated after the near-tragic incident, the fellow said he was very busy that day when he was distracted by the lady. It was the way she walked that caused the fellow to lose focus on his work. He claimed that when she walked by, she tossed her bottoms from side to side like a tree dancing in the winds. Sometimes she held her head high like a peacock while she strolled by. I went over where she stood to simply say hello, or good afternoon. Little did I know that I hadn't tightened the bolts hard enough, he said. The committee of inquiry condemningly disapproved of the employee's actions, saying, "You allowed dangerous gas to leak while you madly watched your fellow worker, with eyes popped out and jaws dropped as if a fashion model was walking past you." He then turned and said this to the lady, "Do not expect fellow factory workers to treat you too nicely simply because you are a lady." Lament 24, conflict over chores. Once a lovely couple was having an argument in their home. What started as a small chat over dinner quickly turned into a heated quarrel over chores. When the lady threatened to leave, the gentleman picked the frying pan and said, "I will do it then. There is nothing embarrassing about preparing meals. Can anyone become ashamed of their own stomachs?" "No. I doubt not. If you are planning to leave because I have refused to hold the frying pan, I will do it then." I went to my friend's house to check out how he was handling the kids after his wife left to see her mother in the countryside. I was having a meal he had offered me at the dining table when one of the kids fell off from the chair. Mark rose from his seat, went to where the kid was, lifted the child using one leg and threw her onto the sofa together with her doll. "Stay on that couch. You have caused me much trouble already." There was another child on my left who had soup spilled all over his sweater and hasn't been changed for days. I was shocked by the way he handled the children, roughly as if they were bags of corn. He throws them onto their beds like pillows and cushions onto a sofa. My friend Marcus Antonius is a factory worker, so his behavior is not much of a surprise. "You can't just throw these precious little ones around the house as you please, you know. You are going to break their necks," I said to him. I also observed the way he felt detached while being around the kids. At the house, I saw the way he walked and worked. He acted like a robot. I was amused when he came out of the kitchen with a pile of plates, then started to toss them onto the dining table one by one. He threw them to slide across the table like the way a fellow throws a bone to a dog to catch. Everything he did was clumsy and funny. He acted very strange, stiff, machine-like. Gender equality versus gender roles. What is the true meaning of the term gender equality? A phrase that we are frequently bombarded with everywhere we turn. It is in the mainstream media, in the streets and literally everywhere, in public places you hear the term ringing in your ears hard which makes your head ache. I believe many women are honest and won't do anything to harm their male counterparts, but there is a small group who have twisted the meaning of this terminology for their own sinister interests so as to swap gender roles. There is a young lady just next door who has turned this phrase into a household appliance. She is always away while the man does all the household chores. When he asks, "Michelle, the queen bee, can you take over?" She yells back saying, "Gender equality, you must get your equal share of work." This sends the man into a steadfast silence. It goes on and on like this for months and many more years. One day the man thought hard, "Am I being dishonored or disrespected?" He asks himself. He thought long and hard, after making up his mind. He then went to tell the lady, "I have seen you are very busy these days and can never spend time at home, so I have decided to hire a nanny to offer us some help. She will be of a great help to us. I too have some issues I need to focus on full time." These words were very shocking to the lady. She could not believe her ears. "No way, you can't bring another woman into this house." She remarks back, "We don't have enough money to pay her," she said. Coincidentally, the nanny happened to be a 20-year-old attractive woman, much younger and more attractive than the forklifter's wife. This provoked more anger in the lady. "How could you give in easily to such a treacherous idea?" she asks. The man in reply says, "They are also my children. I love them just the same way you love them, and I will sacrifice as much as you have sacrificed. So let me handle this situation for now, or things will get messed up around our house as we speak." Lament 25, Dangerous Roles. An esteemed contractor once said, "What some women fail to realize is that a portion of the kinds of jobs the bear boys do are very dangerous. They think it's great fun, which is never the case. When we ask them not to go into dangerous jobs like military, mining, construction, marine fishing, timber logging, etc., they think we are pining them down, taking the best jobs for ourselves and giving them less exciting ones. We are trying to protect them by taking dangerous jobs ourselves and giving them safer ones, but since some have become rebellious, we have no choice but to let them share in our suffering also. Let them feel what it's like to do a poor man's job. Let them feel the heat of the quarry site. Let them inhale sulfur dust of the mines deep below the earth. Let them move stones and rocks till their muscles ache." When I told Milady that I would be away for 2 weeks a month, because of the demanding nature of my job, she thought I was acting deceptively. She believed that there was a girl I went to meet there. When she heard there was a spa near the construction site, it's like her fears were confirmed. The tension between us was growing more and more each day, to such a point that I was forced to take her to my workplace where she stayed with me for 2 weeks. I showed her the tunnel entrance. I let her look at the gaping holes of the abandoned site and said this to her, "Look inside here carefully. Does this look like a place you can hide a lover? What kind of girl would want to stay in such an uncomfortable place anyway?" She had caught wind of rumors that I was hiding a secret lover in the tunnels near the quarry site, something that she actually believed. She speculated that a girl would wait for me at the basement of another apartment still under construction, incomplete yet quite safe. Which of these places is convenient enough to host a secret lover? I said this to her, "If your partner is determined to cheat on you, then he can do it while you watch. Even when you are around him 24 hours a day, he can easily pamper another lover right there where you are and you won't notice it. No amount of monitoring will change him." On the other hand, if he was indeed faithful while she continually threw eyes of suspicion and mistrust on him, it may eventually destroy his interest and love for her. Such a dangerous gamble it is. If my partner would take my place at the dynamite explosives factory while I stay at home, I would gladly accept the swap. For so long I have dreaded the huge cylindrical tins surrounding me, with their pointed tips facing the sky, like rockets about to leave the ground any moment. Anything can go wrong anytime. I have always wondered if these explosives were to one day shred me into pieces, what would happen to my children? My little Billy and Jane, I hope they'll not be told details of what happened to me, because it would hurt them so much. Lament 26, Bachelor's Greatest Fears. There are two categories of ladies that men fear most. First is the highly educated fellows, and then second is the ones from privileged backgrounds. Parents are getting more concerned about the marital status of their kids. Many days and weeks are passing by quickly and their daughter has not yet found a suitor. What shall we do, Reagan? Our children are aging before getting families of their own. If there is one thing men are afraid of, then it's the highly educated women. The gentleman would be terrified to find out that he is dating a PhD, or professor of some college, when he himself did not finish the basic compulsory education. On the other hand, such women are incredibly organized fellows and have fewer desires to quench, so they are relatively gentle and easy to cooperate with. A guy once called his friend to introduce him to some ladies he had just met. They were quite interesting to talk to, so he wanted to know more about them. He had wanted to start a new relationship in an attempt to erase from his mind the memories of a previous failed one. They met at a popular cafe where they decided to conduct their impromptu meeting. The ladies made it on time just as he had hoped. They were served hot drinks and soon they were deep into an exciting conversation. A time came when each group asked to know the other's background, education, etc. The boys gave in their details first. They had barely made it through compulsory education, but the girls appeared more advanced than them. Their levels of education took the gentlemen by surprise. The guy repeated their courses to their friends. This one, she is a nuclear physicist. Oh boy, the other one is a robotics surgeon, and she has also done advanced galactic and intergalactic astronomy, realistic quantum mechanics and nanoelectronics, and many more professions they have never heard of before came in. Upon hearing such awesome stuff, he almost fled after learning the girls were more educated and much more qualified than they themselves. He humbly puts his tail between his legs and walks away quietly without expressing any sign of humiliation. They fled like hunted deer, and disappeared into the dark alley, never to be seen or heard from again. He had to do so lest his honor be tainted. Do not speak too proudly of your academic achievements, my dear, or else you shall make your future prince disappear for good. You might never see him again because he shall vanish like mist. These are things that should have made her more attractive anyway. It gives out clear signs that she is a strong, industrious woman, who won't bother your wallet. Therefore young men should start competing for her instead. They turn away and bury their heads in their games and sports. It appears her professional success has become both a blessing and a curse. The first thing he asks himself, she has done everything for herself. What am I going to do for her to make her happy or at least please her? Wealth, success and honor are status symbols traditionally associated with men. However, many women are getting these titles nowadays. This is a transformation that is happening in not just the so-called developed nations but all over the world. Nations are gradually pounded by waves of transformation of society's structure. These effects are being felt by everyone everywhere. These are the two people bachelors fear the most, the highly educated lady and the girl from high social class, or from a very prestigious background. They repel one another like the same poles of magnets. There was a young couple that had been dating for a long time before suddenly things got haywire. The girl, upon realizing that her companion was leaving her, she screamed out loud to him saying, "Do you want me to be poor and foolish so that you can love me? Besides that, why do you keep running away from me? You never even say hello. It isn't my fault that I am like this, and I inherited this wealth from my grandfather, so that should not give you a good enough reason to reject me." "No, my dear," replies the young man, "you see there is a time when things change, when the unpleasant reality of life is finally known to you, love becomes a myth, it fades away into the distance. It's just that unlike you who were raised in indulgence, I was brought up in a life full of hardship. Everything I needed I had to work for it from childhood on. Way back as far as I can remember, my life was full of suffering, while yours was satiated with comfort. I am afraid that you will contribute very little, if there is any, to the progress of our family and shall therefore be sitting on the sofa all day making outrageous demands, throwing words at me asking me to get you something you want while a servant polishes your nails, which are frighteningly long. I did love you very much, of course, it's just that I am afraid of what might happen to us. I think it's a high time I use more of my logic and less of my feelings." "Hey, wait a minute," interrupts the girl, "are you saying that the woman with dirty hands and shaggy hair is the ideal wife material?" You don't want me to look clean, do you? She grumbles. No, I do believe that it's kind of complicated matter here, it's just that I don't feel anything more special about this discussion or partnership. I would just be like another manservant in your mega mansion. Maybe you should be married by a prince that would make you equal partners. A gentleman from a lowly background can never satisfy your ambitions, they can never achieve enough of your expectations. Lament 27, Easy Prey. Man will always look for easy prey, he searches for an easy meal everywhere, he looks to the north, to the south and says unto himself, why should I struggle with this huge and powerful eland of the Drakensberg? With her tough neck she can easily break my teeth, with her long hard and sharp horns, she can easily pierce through my flesh like knife through butter, why do I struggle when there are easier to catch antelopes, gazelles, impalas, and kudus in the savannas below, a wise move towards the end of the last ice age. After the glacial melt, many of the mountain lions moved from the Atlas Mountains and Drakensberg Cape ranges to the tropical savanna, one by one. They moved to the Great Plains where climatic conditions were more favorable and food is more abundant. The Great Migration began and within 10,000 years they had adapted to the new environment. Lament 28, Marry My Sister. A guy once came to me to say this, I would like to marry your sister, we are engaged, everyone in my family and your family knows this except for you, but before I proceed, I would like to get some well wishes and possibly some blessings from you. Lately you seem withdrawn from all the other members of the family, he said, I love her very much, will I be happy with her? He asked. This question somehow infuriated me a bit, I burst out in anger, saying, what do you want me to tell you? That my sister is crazy, don't marry her? Is that what you want me to speak? You are the one who set your eyes on her, I wasn't there when you were holding hands together and narrated love poems to one another. Do whatever it is you think of, and please don't drag me into your love triangle. If you are so hungry and desperate for information about her, then you can talk to her peers in the neighborhood. I have nothing to tell you, I said this and walked away. I have two beautiful sisters whom I love very much, I will therefore do everything I can in my ability to see them walk through happiness. Lament 29, Love for Thy Riffle. The general said, love your woman just the way you love your riffle, you take so much care for a piece of metal, you oil it each afternoon, wipe it clean of every speck of dust and let it lay by your side when you go to sleep, each morning when you wake up it's the first thing you check up before you go out hunting, you kiss it over 100 times a day saying, oh my beautiful shiny riffle, how can I survive without you? Let's go get some ducks and deer. If you can care so much for a piece of object, how much more care should you give to your fellow human being, said General Stonehart. Lament 30, Girl on the Balcony. Why do some girls have this feeling that someone is watching them? I am having a rest on the balcony on the second floor of an apartment building, and there is this neighboring girl, every time I take a seat to have a rest, she would suddenly stop everything she is doing in her compound and rush straight into their house. Also, when we walk past one another near the gate, she would cringe or catwalk away, in front of my face, even when I am having my own imaginations she thinks I am staring at her, this makes me feel terrible because I don't have time to look at other people let alone staring at them in the first place. Lament 31, Toddlers in a Love Triangle. After having a heartwarming conversation with Belinda, little Jeremy came back to his room. He could not control his emotions, he felt sick, terrified and confused, at the same time he also felt excitement, calm, peace and unexplainable form of joy. His elder sister Anne noticed this and comes to check on him, she tells the others that she thinks there is something wrong with their little brother, he's been in bed all afternoon, he never stays in the house that long, let alone curl himself in bed the whole day. There was a long standoff. Jeremy held on to himself, he didn't say anything to anyone for a while. Later as Belinda persisted, the only person he trusts, he finally opened up. What is it, little Viking? As he was nicknamed at the time, asked her sister, it's just that after talking to Rose, I often feel very strange, I feel funny things going on inside my heart and mind that are difficult for me to handle. Her sister felt amused instead of being sorry for him. "Jeremy, you are not sick, you have fallen in love. At such a young age though. What is that supposed to mean?" asked Jeremy. "Never mind, you will understand when you get older, sooner or later. Please go back to sleep." Lament 32, Daughters of Shay Zone. There was once a seven-sister gang operating on a global network with their activities influencing every province and city-state. To be frank, many of those girls were troublemakers for a great deal of their childhood time. Those cheeky devils have caused many men to become unfaithful and families to break apart. They whispered corruption into good ladies' ears, saying many evil things to them. They went to their homes and said, "You sit here like ducks while your husbands are traveling the world enjoying themselves? Why don't you stretch your legs a bit?" they urge them. Many men are left lamenting, crying to themselves, saying, "Those cheeky devils stole our princesses from us, they lured them away into the unknown, never to be seen or heard from again. Those baboons that hug one another in public places in the eyes of everyone so as to be seen that they are in romantic love, stay away from my precious. Those that frequently show public display affection, they only do that to annoy you. They can't do that when the two of them are alone." Lament 33, Diamonds Over the Bridge. A newlywed couple was walking across a mountain range during their honeymoon excursions when they spotted a huge black bag with lots of mud stains on its leather coat. It lay there beside the footpath. Upon opening it, they were surprised to find it full of huge gleaming diamonds and precious gems. They decided to carry it with them. They went with it on their way. Upon reaching a steep cliff where a deep canyon separates some two standing hilltops, a wooden suspension bridge stood erected there to join the two places. The young man moved in first, leaving behind the lady and the luggage. As he was trying out his newly discovered bridge, it began to shake uncontrollably, but then he carefully and slowly made it to the other side. Then when it was the lady's turn, she too tried to tread slowly and more slowly. Upon reaching halfway, the ropes supporting the bridge began to break and pieces of wood started to fall off. She watched in horror as the pieces descended down below into the blinding mist in the valley bottom. On realizing that the bridge can no longer support her and the bag, she then exclaimed, "Jeremy, do you want me or the bag?" When he hesitated to respond, she immediately let go of the luggage and ran off towards the end before the bridge could completely collapse. When she was on the other side, the young man said, "You know, of course I have always wanted you, but you could have brought the bag with you also. Our joy would have been multiplied tenfold, it would be complete." Lament 34, Where is my mama? Even when a man is an infamous pirate of the high seas, some of his children still do love him. They say to him, "We are proud of you, Papa. After all these long years in the water world, you have managed to come back." But when the mother is away even for a day, the family gets into trouble. The children keep wailing, "Where is Mama? Somebody please bring back my Mama." Even when all their needs are met by another close relative, their hearts are never content. They say, "Thank you for everything you have done for us, but please remember to bring back my Mama." When they are told that their mother is held up somewhere by a very important duty, they refuse to believe it. They say, "Our mother loved her job more than she loved us. She does not care about us anymore. She does not think about us while she is away." The bond between the mother and the child is extremely strong. When a crying newborn child is placed into the hands of the mother, they become silent, but when placed into the hands of the father, they wail loudly, as they can clearly tell the difference. Short guys can also get tall girls. Who said that short guys cannot date tall girls? Quite often, short guys are teased by their taller counterparts, who claim that their minuscule height reduces their chances of getting a fair lady. There is a misconception in the society that for a short fellow, it's gonna be quite hard for him to get the respect he deserves from his partner, and whenever there is a domestic fight, it's he and not the lady that always gets beaten. Are they not forgetting that genuine relationships are based on true love, not on looks? No kind of physical fitness or perfections is going to attract a pretty lady. Once a fellow was asked, "Why do so many ladies get attracted to you, when you are so short? How do you trick them into following you everywhere you go?" "It's not a trick," he replies confidently, what makes you think that you can attract any kind of warm companionship when you have such a bad attitude, even if you are as tall as a flagpost and handsome as Adam? Do you think anyone will want to associate with you when all you do is to ill-treat and intimidate others? Ladies pay less attention to your looks and more to your attitude. All they want is someone who is kind, friendly, understanding, supportive, charming, and all the good things you can say. Those so-called tall and handsome guys continue to send out the wrong message, thought their behavior of don't care, thinking that their pleasant looks will compensate their bad behavior and keep their ladies around them. Everyone is shocked when they see the little boy walking the princess down the aisle. He gets the world's most desired lady, while his arrogant friends watch from a distance as they burn with envy. They refuse to attend his wedding all because they thought that a short guy can never win over the heart of a tall, pretty lady. Girl power at the apex. Girl power is at its climax. Women now occupy nearly every known occupational and professional fields. Some fresh graduates applied for a job that was advertised in the papers, many applied for it, a few got it. For the few that managed to get the job, there was a case of disproportionality. The ladies and the gentlemen that had successfully acquired the job went on to thank their boss for recruiting them. They promised that they will make a great contribution to the company. Some few ladies went on to say to their recruiter that they were surprised by the way the women's ratio was proportionately larger to that of men, especially for a field that was traditionally male-dominated. Since the feminist movements of the 60s, women's rights activism has come a long way. The dominance, success, and the power feminists have been craving for all the time is now theirs. "Excuse me, please, why did you hire me?" asked the lady. "Why are there so many women in your office?" she adds. "Because your governor demands that we should have certain number of women in proportion to male employees. This is a song you have heard sung by feminists time and again. We need more women in this profession, that field, here, there, doing this and that. Well, this is the 21st century we are living in now. I bet there is no professional field where you will not find women." The girl power movements has come a really long way, and with all that success and victory over rights to work, we still have some complaints being thrown at us over the air. There are folks still not happy with what they have so far. "Wait a minute. The governments are forcing companies and organizations to hire staff simply because they are women?" "Yes, you heard me. You should hire all of them simply because they are women. I have heard an agenda from some feminists who say that there should be hiring of more women in these so-called male-dominated workplaces. If there are places where there are too many men in a workstation, then half of them should be fired and women put in their places, so that we can have a 50-50 fairness, and that rigorous procedure of sifting out job applicants to get the best possible staff members, as they say it should be abandoned when hiring female employees because that would be too cruel for them. When a female candidate vies for seat of becoming a mayor, then everyone should all at once vote for her without scrutiny. People should not look at her policies and her plans for the city. They should vote for her simply because she is a woman, and nothing more. This is what I have heard some feminists advocating for. They want women to be hired by companies and organizations without any prior scrutiny or background check of skills acquired in her professional life. They want women to be elected to high offices just for being women and nothing more. If cross-examination was what had been the policies of males that worked in the field before, then they should also apply to the women. If you plan to fill your office blocks with ladies, then let it be the best of them. The principles of integrity, diligence, hard work, visionary spirit, and trustworthiness are universal qualities that apply to all, whether male or female, and they should be scrutinized the same way as well. Anyways, we have awesome women in these cool professions. They are all good to go. We have lots and lots of women now in the military. We have plenty in law enforcement. We have ladies everywhere now. Girl power is now at its climax. Let's go, girls. The world is yours. Let's go. Gender imbalance could be a good thing. Top countries with disproportionate gender ratios in their populations. What are some of the countries with disproportionate ratios of men to women? We do expect that anywhere in the world, the proportions of males with females to be the usual 50-50, while the average global ratio of women to men is 51%, that means that women are slightly more than the number of men in the world. That's probably because a lot of men die prematurely. Boys are known to like engaging in very dangerous, risky behavior that should be avoided at all costs. Men are the ones who usually do the hard, dangerous jobs like working in the mines hundreds of feet underground, fixing electric power lines, logging and serving their countries in the front lines in times of conflicts. They also act as security guards protecting your families from dangerous criminals while you and your family sleeps. So naturally you would expect women to live longer than men because most of the time women always spend their times living in the comforts of their homes. The data is usually very such that on average the women are between 1 to 2% more than men. But there are countries where the population proportion of the genders varies so much that it raises so much eyebrows. Let us mention just a few of those nations. Russia. This is a country that has gone through so many upheavals in the last few decades. The killing of the Tsar Nicholas I by the Bolsheviks in the early 20th century did cast a dark shadow on the country for the decades that followed. The great calamity of Stalin's purges killed millions of Russians, which was then followed by Hitler's invasion of Russian soil that took the lives of millions of Russian men. Russia won World War II with very few men to celebrate at the victory parades on the Red Square. After the great global conflict, then came the troubles of the Soviet Empire. The Soviet Union had grown so large and so complex that it was becoming very difficult to manage. There were rebellions here and there in the satellite states which drained Moscow's resources. Then the Cold War with the United States and its Western allies forced the USSR to devote a huge chunk of its wealth on defense budget. Hundreds of billions of dollars worth of rubles were spent on building weapons of mass destruction that were planned to be used in case a war broke out with the United States. This military and intelligence spending left a huge gap in the Soviets' other industries like agriculture and manufacturing. Millions of people lost their jobs, a lot of men could no longer support their families, and because of the Iron Curtain between the East and the West, they could not move to other countries to look for jobs. The stresses brought about by unemployment, food shortages, and invasive state surveillance on citizens all conspired to destroy the Russian man. He had no other hobbies left to cheer him up, so he is forced by the conditions in his environment to resort into consuming liquor. There is no other drink that is to blame for the disappearance of Russian men other than vodka. It's a toxic complex of chemicals that is sweet in the tongue but cuts up your entrails like a knife when consumed in bulk. Vodka is the terrifying grim reaper that has paid a visit to millions of Russian homes. The government is now realizing the source of the problem and is putting measures in place to ensure that this horrible monster does not claim more lives. The government is putting a lot of restrictions on the sale of alcoholic drinks on all Russian territories at the moment. It is something that is a good start for the community. There needs no reason for poor people to suffer greatly over a substance that can be controlled. China. Another interesting nation to examine at the moment now is China, the most populous nation on earth. It has a fifth of the total world's population. Both China and India each have a fifth of the world's population. Since India is the second most populous country in the world, it doesn't have population control measures. It's coming in fast from behind China and will soon become the number one. The one-child policy was introduced in China during the Cultural Revolution to control the growth of population because it was harder for the government to provide for its citizens enough food to eat. The Communist Party introduced these measures as they saw it a fit way to help manage the country's resources. There have been episodes in Chinese revolutionary history where famines claimed the lives of tens of millions. Such a disaster is something that is quite difficult to forget at all. The stories of desperations and the great suffering of the Chinese people keep ringing in the ears of the CCP over and over again. Several decades later, the plan appeared to have had adverse consequences. Traditional Chinese preferred boy childs over girls, so whenever an ultrasound image would show that a girl is on the way, they would quickly abort. Tens of millions of children were sadly killed this way, because of the preference of the boy child. A generation later, the impacts are clearly visible. The young men now outnumber women by a third. Well, that is a very big ratio that is bound to have very grave socio-economic consequences. It's not an uncommon scene to see five men fighting over a single girl in the streets of Chinese cities. Parents now give their children very special care and attention because they are very rare breed. Young men in China today want to marry, but there are no women to marry them. So they resort to looking for wives and partners overseas. Chinese men go to look for wives in Southeast Asian countries like Thailand, Vietnam, Cambodia, the Philippines, and so many other places. Chinese girls are now treated like princesses. Female alcoblow. There should be a worldwide legislation that bans women from consuming alcohol. It is a saddening sight to see drunken men walking around drunk and trying very hard to hold balance with their feet. Worse is to see them laying around semi-conscious in the side ditches of the road. Drunken behavior is such an appalling thing, and the society as a large should work hard to do something about it, if not completely erase the social menace. Getting drunk exposes one to dangers that you could have averted if you were sober. There are countless dangers one falls into, starting from getting robbed by small children to laying on the tracks of a railway thinking it's a warm piece of bed. There is a countless list of harms that can come to those not so sober. The list is simply inexhaustible. Heavy drinking causes one to become a danger to themselves as well as to others around them. Many of the social problems we have in our society today are attributed to drinking problems. On going to medical terms, and I say it again correctly, this is a scientifically proven theory, you can check this out for yourself on the World Wide Web. Physiologically speaking, drinking harms women more than it does for men. The liver, an organ that breaks down alcohol, is much larger in men than women, so men are more easily able to wean off and hangover than women could. A man can gulp down a whole bottle of wine and still remain sober. He can walk home himself without anyone's help after a night of heavy drinking. A woman, on the other hand, can easily get zonked out after taking only a single cup full of the same wine. She collapses right there on the table after taking a single sip. And the guy besides her who drank two whole bottles is still strong enough to help carry her to her home. Most feminists don't like hearing this, but it is the fact. They should remind our ladies that they would be in a better position to defend themselves only if they choose to be sober. A lady has a 10% of outwitting bandits or street robbers, but that chance falls down to zero if she is under the influence of alcohol. I was standing by the roadside waiting to hitch a ride when I saw a young woman highlighting a bus. She was lethargic and appeared to be struggling to get her footing. People really felt sorry for her. Some other older women tried to help her get off the bus. They pulled her along the street while dragging her feet on the ground. Fortunately, they helped the young lady reach her house, which was just a few hundred yards from the bus stop. They knocked the door and her family opened for her. They opened the door and pulled her in. They thanked the well-wishers for helping out. It looks like the family wasn't surprised to see their daughter completely zonked out. Someone else had to bring in her purse, saying that she had forgotten about it inside the bus. Drunk men are always a nuisance on our local streets, but a drunk woman is a very sad thing to watch. Even if you are not their family or friend, it tears your heart to see a woman struggling to stand upright on the streets because of alcohol. It's a very, very sad picture to watch. Children that have a father who returns home every day drunk are living a life of terror. He is okay when he leaves the family in the morning, he kisses his kids goodbye and goes to work. But when he returns home in the evening, he is a completely different person. The alcohol running in his veins has made him forget that he has a family. It unleashes the beast inside him. He yells at the small children, throws things at the wife, and turns the family home into a hall of terror. The kids have a sober mom who they lean upon when their daddy is not in a good mood. If she gets fed up by his inappropriate behavior, she can always move away to seek solace elsewhere. But if it's the mother that comes see home drunk, then the family is truly miserable. The children have no one else to lean on to find some comfort. Here we can say this is truly a miserable family. Nothing in the world can ever replace the warm, nurturing hands of your mom. Whichever child that loses his/her mom to alcoholism has lost an irreplaceable love in their lives. So I therefore urge all the world's lawmakers to urgently pass legislation in whatever jurisdiction they are in at the moment. I urge them to pass laws that completely bans the sale of all kinds of alcoholic products to women of all ages. This will save the society a great deal, as it will take away a lot of setbacks we are facing in our local communities. Women are always vulnerable even when they are 100% sober, so when you add drinking element, you would have turned a small manageable problem into a calamity. The fabulous world of female sports. We all enjoy watching women's sports, especially ones like tennis. The courts often get filled with thousands of fans, and millions more watch from their homes these super competitive games. Fans eagerly wait to hear who is going to be the next tennis queen. There is no other female sport that mesmerizes more than that of tennis. When the court princess swings the racket, it drives the fans crazy. I love the way she swings the racket, it's so elegant, so beautiful, and so enchanting. Her moves exude beauty and elegance, her artistic symmetry has absolutely no match, there isn't a lady in the whole world like her, because she is so beautiful, says the fans. Many of the men that always go to watch live women's tennis matches would flatter the players whenever they get an opportunity to do so. As long as she is not a relative of theirs, they will shower her with all the flattery they can think up. It's such a difficult task, especially for these young ladies, when they walk down that court and with the thought of being watched by the entire crowd above tormenting them. Sometimes their matches get played live, giving a chance for the whole world to see. Unlike male athletes, female sports stars are more conscious to what others think or say about them. They really do care about the way fans perceive them, very sensitive to the comments they make. An harsh statement thrown by an opposing fan towards a female tennis player can really ruin her day, especially if it's something that attacks her self-esteem. She holds her body image very carefully, and anyone attacking it, whether the opposing player or fan, should be dealt with right away. She may react to the comments, which may lead to an altercation that ruins the match. So guys should be more careful with what they say to their ladies before they go out into the world to play in representation for their community. I have come to the disturbing realization that some men go to female sports to look at other things that are not the ball. In the process of watching the game, their eyes wander off into other places that they are into supposed to. Hey man, what's wrong with you? Why can't you just keep your eyes on the ball? The match will end soon, yet you have experienced nothing of value, they respond saying, she is just a gorgeous athlete, I just found myself staring at her gleaming face, I just can't help it, in addition to being a great player, she is also very beautiful, her eyes keep glowing like campfire, her teeth are shining white as milk, her ponytail hair is so long and soft like a corn silk, her neck is elegant as a wine bottle, her forearms like sausages. Her back is smoothly curved like a Mongol bow, her breasts are like coconut cups, and buttocks like watermelons, she is so gorgeous, I just can't help it, but continue to get blown away every time she runs across the field, he says. Well, is that the only thing that you have been looking at the whole time, you ask, but the guy won't talk to you anymore, he is in a world of his own now. He is so deeply absorbed into watching the lady's body that he becomes oblivious to the people around him in the stadium, even people that are trying to move around him to get a seat are having great difficulties getting his attention. This is how the female sport has turned out to be. If it was the men playing in the field, then all the eyes would be focused on the ball, but since it's the ladies in the field having their day, some guys are having a hard time concentrating on the match. A lot of things causing this kind of behavior in a portion of the male fans is impulsive, it just shows P on its own, it's not that because those men are immoral that they keep distracted, a lot of them are not used to seeing women, especially pretty young women dressed in shorts and shirts, and running around the field like kids. But ladies should not be concerned because only a small portion of men act this way, it's only a tiny portion, they there need not be alarmed. Some polices by sports associations towards women may also be invasive in nature. Do you remember a short while ago when the Norwegian handball team protest the sexist dress code put in place by IHF, the sports governing body, the team was fined for not wearing bikinis, which was the standard code mandated by the institution. This kind of behavior obviously sparked a global outcry, as you all know it, a bikini is just a friendlier term to call a bra and underwear. The Norwegian women's team asked the organization and the world a very important question when they asked why were men allowed to wear shorts that reaches to their knees while women were allowed to wear only underwear in the same completion. This was very disrespectful and dehumanizing to the women and their families. It clearly showed that these policy makers had other intentions that were not about creating an entertaining sport in an environment healthy for all. I don't know what was the reasoning behind the thinking of most those policy makers whom I assume to be men, they had somehow perverted perceptions on how female athletes should dress. They thought that sexualizing the women would actually make the game more interesting, since most of the people that come to the games are mostly men. If it's great game you came to deliver, then we already have that. We see great sports performances in men already, what more are you going to provide? They ask the women. Before partaking in any sports completions, ladies are told that if they want their game to attract many fans, then they should show off some flesh. Putting out lots of flesh out there would make all the men in the local towns come running to watch the match, that the stadiums would be so full to the capacity that many thousands of fans would still remain stranded outside trying to break into the stadium so they would catch a glimpse of the ladies, the sports federations and the teams would then in turn make lots of money, and that would be a win-win situation for everyone. This is the humiliation that women are subjected to, and the world is now paying great attention. If you check in other athletics completions such as track and field, you shall realize that women are also forced to wear underwear while their male counterparts are allowed to wear shirts that fully cover the torso and shorts that reach to the knees. Just take a close look at American football women's attire, you don't have to be a genius to figure out that they are not really clothing at all, but things that should only be worn indoors. It appears to us that the whole thing about sports and athletics is that men are invited to poly the actual games while women are invited to strip. There is nothing about sportsmanship that women can provide that men haven't already. These are some of the reasons why some critics in religiously conservative countries argue that women should not be allowed to participate in sports altogether. They continually argue that a female's half-nude body should be seen only by her lover, husband, or her toddlers whom she keeps close to her bosom. Everyone else is a stranger who is not allowed to view her body or touch her flesh. It's such a sensitive and controversial topic in all parts of the world. But the game is making progress anyways despite the drawbacks. There is always room for improvement. Do you remember a couple of years back when the FIFA Women's World Cup was first introduced? Some rowdy men used to mock those athletes, they made fun of the competition, especially on its low fan attendance at the time. They used to say that the only fans that come to the Women's World Cup were their coaches, friends and families, no one else in the world is interested. Fast that forward a couple of decades later, you see that a lot has changed, the competition is gaining worldwide following and stadiums are always full to capacity, so nothing is all impossible after all. Old cultural double standards. In some Middle Eastern cultures it is customary to publicly stone a woman who is caught committing adultery or any kinds of sexual activity outside marriage. When they catch them in bed, they let the man go and then proceed to publicly parade the woman just to humiliate her and her family, then proceed to stoning her. So where is justice here? Isn't the act of sexual immorality committed by two people? If justice was delivered to both lawbreakers, then tribal men would not be quick to throw stones at the woman, because they would see themselves in that poor man being stoned. But because they are beyond the reach of the law regarding this crime, these tribal men go about jumping into the beds of wives and daughters of other men to satisfy the cravings of their flesh and run off as soon as he is done. Before marriage ceremonies are conducted in these cultures, extensive background checks are always done to make sure that the girl is a virgin. Even when she proves that she is indeed a virgin, the groom's family still takes her to medical doctors to have a physical exam done on her. They have to make sure that their daughter is married to a real virgin. The virginity test physical examinations are so invasive and so humiliating for the girl and her family, yet it is socially accepted in those cultures. Nothing, however, ever gets done about the man. He goes about sleeping around in his youth, and when he decides to settle down and have a family, no one ever asked him how many women he violated before he got married. Through his late teenage years to his early 30s, you find that he had probably been in bed with dozens of women, and probably broken the virginity of many girls either through consensual contact or outright rape, yet he expects to get a virgin lady as a wife despite his previous sexual adventure in his youth. These are the morality standards embedded in many cultures around the world today. Not one ever stops to question the viability and effectiveness of these laws. Do they really prevent the actual crime from happening? Is this unnecessary spilling of blood? Men being quick to take a machete and hack down their daughter to death because of some unproven accusation. daughters they spent so many years raising, educating, and bringing up into adulthood. All the good olden days with their children are forgotten once they hear something negative about their daughters. It's kind of shocking, especially for people living in the West. They can't imagine how a man can spill the blood of his own biological daughter simply because he saw her hanging out with boys from school. It's so distressing, but it's true, these things do really happen every day behind closed doors, and very few people get to hear about them. Even in the 21st century it still happens. A few videos of such violent murders pop up on social media a couple of times a year, but these are the few unlucky ones that got their misery filmed. Their number is just a drop in the ocean compared to the countless more that never get any kind of public attention. The stories that got the most public attention are the guys who relocated to the West with their families but decided to keep some aspects of their cultural practices intact. They brutally did away with some of their daughters who had failed to follow the family's traditions. Well, as you know it, obviously investigations were done and the culprits caught. In the courtrooms, it was not the gruesome some natures of the murders but the reasons behind the killings that were really shocking. When it came out that these men had killed their own daughters to protect their own cultural name, it was something never heard of in the West. In fact, the term honor killings wasn't known in the West until a few decades ago when high-profile murders started hitting the airwaves of Western media. It shocked people in the global North and other countries in the world where such cultures do not exist. In the global North, all homicides are treated with the same weight and face the full force of the law of the land irrespective of the reasons behind the killings. These are guys who forgot that they were living in a totally new lands with totally new laws and customs, and when they say their daughters hanging out with the wrong people, they decided to act without hesitation. Sometimes traditional fathers can be too hard on their daughters and cause them to rebel. The final desperate act of a daughter running away from the family home is a result of years of breakdown in communication between the parent and the child. When she starts to think her daddy is too controlling over her, she decides to take matters into her own hands. Nothing good ever comes out of family feuds when they are allowed to boil to such high proportions. Why do folks allow their sons to travel the world, jump into bed with whatever lady they come across, let him live the high life and still welcome him with open arms when he returns home from his sexual adventures, but when they hear rumors about their daughters, they are quick to take action against her with all their might. The mind-blowing luxuries of a Gulf princess. Few years ago there was a daring abduction attempt of the Dubai princess by some Western fanatics who claimed that she was being held against her own will in golden cage in the glittering metropolis of Dubai. They claimed that Princess Latifah wasn't happy in her own home and therefore had the right to travel the world as she pleased and live her life in whatever way she wanted. These guys were forgetting the fact that Latifah was royalty and there is a manner in which royalties all over the world are supposed to conduct themselves. There is strict social code of conduct for every member of the royal family regardless of culture and religion. Any slight deviation from the norm can very easily bring great harm to the royal family as well as the nation. You can see how the British royal family is very strict on how its members conduct themselves in the public arena and always take disciplinary actions against any of its members that put a dent on the family image. So these Western human rights fanatics are putting aside the fact that Britain, a democratic Western country, has very strict rules to protect its monarchy, and travel into the Gulf to interfere in the affairs of the Arab world. Members of the British royal family are always heavily guarded. They don't easily mingle with the members of the general public. Dubai royal family, on the other hand, are friendly and easygoing. They interact freely with the commoners. I am surprised to see how free the Sheikh's kingdom's royals were. They can sit down and have a chat with almost anyone that visits their city. This is the opportunity these guys used to get into close contact with the princess, make some friendship with her and then plan to lure her out of her Emirati kingdom. Imagine the same thing would have happened in the UK. Let's say an Arab man would befriend an English princess then elope with her to some Arab country. Imagine the scandal that would have shrouded the British monarchy. There would be headlines in the BBC saying that an Arab terrorist had kidnapped a British princess and plans to do very wicked deeds to her. This would have been a scandal of grand scale and the British papers won't stop talking about it for years. This incident would in fact ruin diplomatic relations between Britain and whatever country this guy comes from. There would also be a stigma towards people of Arab descent living in the UK in general. But since it's the other way round, where Westerners are going into Gulf countries and trying to lure their royals out, there is no condemnation of the fanatics who tried to illegally get the princess out of her country. Instead, it's the Gulf royal family that gets all the blame when they are actually the victim of propaganda warfare. If you only follow Western media, you will realize that things have been blown out of proportion, the real story is completely out of context. If you have got plenty of time to kill, you can research on interception of the yacht Nostromo, on the web and draw your own conclusions to the case. Just give yourself a brief recap of the events that took place on that fateful week in 2018. First of all, I am speaking on my own personal account, so let no one take my words as accurate account of what is actually happening at the glittering desert metropolis. I am not a Muslim and I don't come from anywhere in the Middle East, but events in the past few years have compelled me to make a statement. I have watched every clip and read every news story about the so-called, or should I say, ill-thought phrase, the runaway princess of Dubai, and where are her whereabouts? The recent events have come unexpected and have taken the world by surprise. The world media, especially the Western media, have rushed into the story and have started drawing their own conclusions about the saga. You know, the aggressive and intrusive behavior that is typical of Western media, they quickly judge and ill-talk everyone even before they understand them. They announce to the world that there is going to be a serious scandal in the Emirati Kingdom, and the royal family is soon going to crumble. If you read some of the headlines, you will be shaken to the bones. Many are very brutal. The Arab media, on the other hand, takes a more careful approach to the matter. They are careful with the words they put in the headlines, because of the deep respect they have for the Dubai princess. Is the Dubai runaway princess a rogue and troubled kid just trying to mess things up? Well, I will leave that answer to you. Everyone should shape their own thoughts and conclusions. But here is my personal opinion. For those who have visited Dubai before, let's first and foremost commend the Sheikh for the amazing work he has done for his country. Dubai is the most moderate and freest country in the Arab world today as we speak. If you see how far they have come in just a few years, you will be obliged to congratulate the ruling family for the sacrifices they have made. The Sheikh's family has done a lot for Dubai over the decades, moving it from being one of the poorest countries in the world to becoming one of the richest. Dubai, as we all see it, deserved to be called the jewel of the Arab world. Anyone who has ever visited this tiny Gulf country before and seen how far it has come compared to other nations in the Middle East will not be quick to judge the ruler. It is one of the freest places to travel and to do business. Okay, we're done with endorsements, now to the family saga. Shortly after the daring but failed escape of Princess Latifa, the world's media made a whirlwind out of her story. Some headlines were running like this: the missing princess of Dubai, is she really a victim of Islamic oppression of women or just another rebellious girl who is unaware of the fact that her risky behavior may bring ruin to her family and her Emirati kingdom? What could have been the reasons for her trying to escape? If you watch the entire video she released before her daring attempt, you will notice that there is no mention of horrific things done to her, things the international community would classify as a violation of human rights. Things that would justify her escape. If they had denied her an education, forced her into an early marriage, beaten, or sexually assaulted her, then her escape would be justified by the court of public opinion. But why would a princess want to run away? She had all the riches of the Arab world to herself. What was she running away from? Is it her family's wealth? The Islamic veiling of women, or the daily accompaniment of bodyguards who follow her wherever she goes? Why would her father lock her up in a cell and leave the other children free? In my opinion, she must have done something really disturbing to be in such a state. She must have been engaging in really risky behavior. I have watched the video released by Princess Latifa many times, to try to get some clues to what her life was like in the kingdom. She argues that her father, the ruler of Dubai, doesn't give her enough freedoms to enjoy herself. She says her father is a very bad person. She even accuses him of very serious crimes I would not mention here. She also goes ahead and says that, if you are watching this video, then it's either I am in prison or I am dead. We may not have legitimate ways to verify those claims, but I believe the ruler of Dubai is not the brutal man she describes. In fact, he is a reformer, and always coming up with changes to the constitution all the time so that it could become more inclusive for the international community. Based on many interviews of the Sheikh done by big media houses like BBC, the Emiratis are trying to quickly modernize while still trying to preserve their cultural heritage. You know, globalization also comes with negative effects in that the invading cultures of the world can very easily swallow your own local customs. Now if you look at Dubai, the foreigners outnumber the locals by a very huge margin, a whooping ratio of 8:1. Meaning that every Emirati is surrounded by 8 foreigners in his neighborhood, if they don't preserve some aspects of their cultural heritage such as national dress and code of conduct, then they will lose their identity in just a few years. When the Emiratis pass laws that people, especially tourists, should not hold hands or kiss in public, they have a very important point. That's decency, modesty, or should I say respect for others around you. Have you been to some of the Caribbean islands and see what tourists do? There are some places that are so notorious with these social ills that quite often you will see tourists making out, hugging and kissing, and doing all their adult stuff right there on the beaches in broad daylight, at times with children close by watching everything. The Emiratis of course don't want to allow their modest society to be turned into an XXX tourist destination. They are open to the world and want to interact with as many cultures as possible while keeping in mind that they also need to protect their own culture as well. It's a very delicate balance, and a very tight rope they have got to walk. These Arabs of the Gulf have a very conservative culture. And they would do anything, at all costs, to protect their family names, let alone the reputation of an entire kingdom. Examining the words of Princess Latifah, and the Hollywood-worthy story of how her escape from home was halted by the Indian and Emirati authorities. Do you ever wonder how it would have turned out if she had actually managed to escape and come to the shores of the West? If Western governments had received her with open arms and given her the asylum she was dying for, then this would have been a very serious diplomatic crisis with the Emirati government. If she had managed to reach the West, she would have been hidden off from view and denied publicly by government officials that she was in any country she was residing in, just to preserve diplomatic ties with the sheikhs. I really tried to sympathize with her and understand her situation, but I failed to fall for her claims. This princess had the luxuries and privileges most girls around the world would envy her for. She rode very fine horses, she went skydiving, and many countless trips around the world. Yet she still claims that she has had no freedoms at all. What more freedom could any child born of royalty ever want? If she had managed to escape, she would probably have ended up on Long Beach in California sunbathing in the hot summer sun, wearing just a bikini. Well, I have never seen any Muslim girls in bikinis before. I hope I could meet one someday. A Muslim girl walking on a public beach half-nude would be very shameful to her family. Especially if someone takes her photos without her approval or even noticing it, then distributes those scandalous photos on the web. For an ordinary Muslim family, it would be very scandalous and shameful thing. Oh. Hold on, that's just only for the ordinary Muslims. Imagine that happening to the daughter of a ruling sheikh. And not just any ordinary sheikh, but the ruler of Dubai, the most magnificent Arab city on earth. How scandalous that is going to be. When photos emerge on social media, of the princess of an Arab kingdom sunbathing half-naked on a beach, oh boy, that is a story I would love to listen to, oh boy, those are photos I would do anything to get access to. There was a time, a short while ago, when some photo of Malia, one of the Obama daughters, was doing rounds on social media, that dim poor quality image went viral and reached every corner of the planet in almost an instant. That wasn't the first time a girl kissed a boy, or should I say the girl kissed the boy in public at campus grounds. Of course not, that wasn't the first time. In fact, freshmen do embarrassing things with one another publicly all the time. They have very clumsy and amusing ways of expressing love. The fact that she was a product of the White House is what made the image go viral. I bet Papa was very disappointed with that photo and really scorned her there in the secret of the Oval Office. Yo mama and I work very hard to bring food to the table, yet you pay us back by bringing shame? Next time you do that to me I will hoop yo ass, he said to her. Please don't smear my good name with mud. These kinds of images of the Obama daughters are what the Sheikh's family do not want to be associated with. One thing these crazy little girls who happen to find themselves in royalty fail to understand is the nature of the gravity of their actions. When one of her parents get elected to high office to become a world leader, then they ask their little daughter to be a little bit more cautious with her words or actions, because everything they do from now on will not only be for their own personal interest but may impact the whole family, be it negative or positive. The father hires bodyguards to accompany his baby daughter everywhere she goes as protection. Now her daddy is in high office, she may become a lucrative target for criminals of all kinds, political enemies that may want to harm her, bandits that may kidnap her for ransom, or even just ordinary folk that may try to get her into a trap they can use to blackmail that fellow in high office for financial or political gains, or simply out of mere wickedness. The list of dangers is endless. The little spoiled girl, on the other hand, sees things differently. The thought of having bodyguards, especially males, accompanying her everywhere she goes with the exception of restrooms is a form of oppression from her father. She whines over the fact that she has lost her freedom. The long-desired freedom to go anywhere she wants, anytime she wants, and get to interact with anyone she likes. Deep in her heart, she madly desires that freedom to go out with any boy she chooses, and come back home at any time she wants without anyone bothering her, even if it's 2 hours past midnight every day. She wants the freedom to do so. It's one thing when you are an ordinary citizen, it's another situation when you are a close relative of a high-ranking public official. All the eyes of the world are upon you and your family, every small mistake you make can easily be exaggerated, therefore they all need to tread more carefully. Caution is something these crazy little girls will never understand. There is always more at stake than their tiny chicken brains can ever comprehend. They always think that the whole world was made just for them. A few years ago, we saw how the emergence of old photos of a Thai royal raised tempers and fueled protests around the country. Before the guy assumed royal duties, he lived an ordinary life and he went about in a don't-care lifestyle just like every other crazy kid on the block. He had nothing to be concerned about. Fast forward several years down the road. The guy is now made king of the country and the citizens begin to question everything about him. Every tiny little detail concerning his life is put under the microscope for the whole nation to examine. Sadly for him, some old not-so-decent photos of him emerged out of the blue and started doing rounds on social media. The ordinary folks begin to see them and assume they were taken when he were in office. They begin to question his behavioral code of conduct and fitness to rule the nation. The Thailand anti-monarchy protests of 2020 proved to the world that controversial photo of video leaks of royals can very easily spark civil unrests that may destabilize a nation. Feminist movements appear to be succeeding in recruiting Arab women into their ranks. They are going all over the Arab world, reminding them of how oppressed they are and why they should do something about it. They are promised great happiness should they free themselves from their male guardians. Even in Arab countries where male guardianship is not enshrined by law, they believe these is still a lot that can be done to alleviate the suffering of the Arab women. Feminists claim that the Arabs are backward communities who stubbornly refuse to modernize their culture. The world is moving on while they are still clinging on to so-called barbaric cultural practices. End of laments. Number. Final clause. We have come to the end of our conversation. Looking forward to connecting to you soon. We shall have more to discuss. Please leave your thoughts and queries about this text in the reviews section. If you have something that needs further elaboration or have got some burning question, you can always text me and I shall be more than happy to respond appropriately. Write to me. dodzacri@gmail.com. *NB. Make sure you have the latest version of this text. You should check for newer versions at your favorite stores in order to get instant access to free content updates. Thank you for your time. Footnotes. My most used/favorite stylistic features. Sharp contrast. Heavy metaphor. Extravagant exaggeration. HIJK. The information provided above may not be certain. HIJK. Hold on, sir/madam. You want to say something, please hold back your words. I know what you want to say, to compliment on it up front, you may be right, but for now please let Billy sell his pancakes to the princess. The reference to masculine or feminine characters in the above stories is not a biased motive to discriminate against any gender, it's just for the purposes of description. The author's repeated use of words such as he/him/man/king are just for the purposes of enchanting the narrative. If you feel offended by them, then feel free to replace them with whatever words you choose as you read along. These pronouns are not put in place to intimidate. You can also contact the author directly and specify which part should changes be made to and to what particular effect. The author respects all readers and will not misrepresent members of any class, age, status, or gender. All readers are precious. I am trying to avoid the inconvenience of having to jump from one side of the group to another, as it easily puts the readers off. Jumping from side to side, back and forth, here and there is really irritating. Take for instance, it's better to say, the king came out of his castle, called the knights and asked him to take him out on a ride through the royal forests and left his son in charge of the castle, than to say, the king/queen came out of his/her castle, called the knight/knightess and asked him/her to take him/her out on a ride through the royal forest and left his/her son/daughter in charge of the castle. Textual homogeneity. Some aspects of the words, phrases, and stories share lots of similarities with one another. The keen reader who repeatedly cross-check between different titles will definitely notice this trend. If characters are portrayed in such a sluggish manner that makes the text boring to the reader, then reader please remember to inform the author as soon as possible. Cover image: a lumberjack sits on a tree stump contemplating the losses of his life. Theme by the author.